Hi everyone, this is Lead Her Shift, and we are currently here talking to Françoise. I can't wait to have this conversation. She's one of the other dynamic women I look forward to having this conversation with about leadership. She has a myriad of experience. I know it, you're gonna soon know it. And I look forward to her sharing, but also us learning together in this space. So, Françoise, how are you? How's everything going? COVID
is
happening.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited. I'm doing well. It's a bit late. I live in Morocco. It's like 9:30 p.m.
Yeah.
But I decided to keep my last bits of freshness for you.
So, thank you so much for that.
So, you know, I'm hiding from my kids. Everything is fine.
I think maybe not, just don't let me say that. Anywho, so tell me a little bit about Françoise. Who is Françoise?
So my name is Françoise Mudute. The things I can say about me, the first is that I'm African. So I am from Cameroon. I've lived across different places in the world, but Cameroon is home for me. I'm also French. I spent quite a bit of my life in France. I haven't lived in France for the past 12 years.
Okay.
I'm kind of back on the continent. I spent 7 years in Senegal, and for the past 2 years or so, I've been in Morocco. So I'm exploring the continent. I'm a feminist. It's the second thing I should say. I'm a feminist activist. I have worked in women's rights organization for almost all of my career, and now I am embracing the consulting life, which is a great way for me to work on different women's rights issues without the constraints of having to embrace a party line that will come from any organization. And lastly, but really not least, I am the founder of a platform that's called Eyala. It's a platform that explores what it means to African women when they call themselves feminists today. So it's a bit like what you're doing. I'm having a lot of conversations. It's really a conversation-based platform where I speak to a myriad of women from across the continent and in the diaspora, and basically asking them, what does that mean when you call yourself a feminist? So we talk about it, but from a place of experience, not expertise. So we talk about their journeys, we talk about the way they embody feminist values in their daily lives. And we do that as one-to-one interviews, the way you're doing now, but also have like spaces that are called sister circles, where we come together physically.
Right.
So COVID has been a bummer. But we come together physically, and we have like really powerful, vulnerable discussions about who we are and why we do what we do.
Wow. I think, so firstly, that's amazing. Because oftentimes I find that just generally, I feel like women don't often have safe places or safe spaces, even girls, where they can be a sisterhood or a community to have these conversations and be more open and get support, not only just advice, but support and mentorship. So well done on that. But why? Like, why? I mean, they're professionals all over the world doing amazing things, and they don't come up with these different ideas. They don't launch off to build community in that way. What sparked that for you?
For Ayana, for me, there was two things. So I was working in an NGO, and I was working with amazing African activists from across the continent, working in different issues. We're all working together to end child marriage. So I was kind of coordinating our advocacy. And I was like, this is so amazing. There's so many of them. And it really, every day I looked at them and I was like, this right here challenges everything you are hearing every day about us as African women. What we hear about African women is that we are victims, we need help from outside, from the West, just to claim our rights, we need support. What I was seeing every day is women who were leading that fight for our rights. And I was just like, that first of all, that alone is something that we need to put out there, saying we don't need external initiative.
Right.
That was my first thing. And I felt like we don't hear that enough.
Mm.
And when we do hear African feminists speak, we hear them from a position of expertise, like they have to perform their expertise. So they either have 2 minutes that CNN kindly gave them to make a point because something happened in the world,
true,
or they have 10 minutes, 8 to 12 specifically, in a conference to present their expertise.
Mm.
I had listened to these women in that format, and I became over the years extremely frustrated because I wanted to have other conversations with them.
Right.
And I wanted to ask about, you know, like, so this feminism thing, like, how does it happen when you're not at work? Why do you care so much? Why do you do what you do? Like, what, you know, what brought you in this room? And this conversation, they do happen. When we come together, we go to the conferences, and the best conversations are happening at the buffet during the lunch break. Mm. Because this is where it's happening, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is, it's not on the agenda. So it's completely ad hoc. It's completely random. And I was like, this is what I'm living for right now. So I go to the conference and I'm like, forget about the main program. I'm here for the lunch break. You know, like, I want the lunch break conversations. And I thought, what if we just had those conversations? Because each of these conversations were so nourishing for me, nurturing me, like, just things like, how do you handle the how of the why and the how we do things?
For right.
me, was really becoming bigger for me in terms of an obsession. And I was like, I just want to have these conversations. And then I said, if I need them, maybe some others need them as well. So
right.
I started to do it. And then the more I did it, the more I realized it's not just a conversation. We also need the spaces. That's what I was feeling. And so from then, I was just responding to the needs. People were saying, we need more. And I was trying to do more. So that's what I've been trying to do. I guess it came out of frustration and a strong need for community.
And so for you, because the term feminist and feminism and feminist activists and all these terms that we often identify with can be misinterpreted or misunderstood. So for you, from all you've learned, from the conversations you've had, from the different women in your life, what would you say feminism means to you?
Yeah, I like the way you asked the question, because it's what it means to me. Because what I have learned is that it means many different things for many different women.
Different people, yeah.
Exactly, right? So for me, I think the way I see it, that it means different things, but they all come together. The first thing is I acknowledge that the way the world is set up is really set up for women to fail, right?
Mm.
So, and that it is not like an individual thing, it's a system thing. Right.
So right.
I just look out there and I'm like, you know, this game is rigged, and it's rigged against us as a
person.
Second thing for me is that I decide that I want to do something about it. So for me, my feminism is like an action. So I'm like, okay, what can I do about this?
Mm.
So I decide that I want to take action. The third part of the definition for me is that I realize that action I want to take is not individual. Like, I need to be
in community.
In community to do this, because basically the work is too much. Like,
patriarchy
is everywhere, so creative, so apt at reinventing itself, and we cannot take it on alone, right? So I feel like I need to be in a movement. I don't feel like it's just about like what I do in my home or what I do with my friends. And then the last piece of it is like, because I'm in a movement, I don't want to just take, it's not just a movement of like, we come together for collective action. It's a movement of sisterhood as well. So that's where like nurturing the community in itself. And that's where my work with Ayala really is focused on. Is like this. It's not just, oh, we're going to do joint advocacy, or we're going to sign on the same letter, or we're going to protest together. It's like
right.
We need to hold each other. So I a lot of my practice of feminism is a practice of sisterhood. It's massively important for me that we don't just work together, but that we hold each other.
Right. Hold each other. So let's take a step back for a minute. Aside from all your work, aside from all the things that you've been doing and now your consultancy, what's some fun facts outside of all of that? What's some fun facts about you that many people may not even know?
I think what people don't know about me is that I love to sing. I love to sing. It's something that, it's something that maybe if I didn't have African parents, I'd be a singer right now. No, probably not. That's probably not true. But I do love to sing, and I don't do enough of it. But from time to time, you will find me on a stage singing something.
That's good to know.
Yeah, that's something people don't know about me, I have to say.
Wow. Who would have thought? Francois, right? Singer. And has that ever had any influence? So you might love singing, but in terms of music, has that had any influence on you as a woman or as an individual or even as a leader in the different roles that you've ever had?
I would say that the singing, because I used to sing, I used to sing a lot as a teenager. I was in a gospel choir in France.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think it did play a role in my leadership kind of journey. I was very young still, but you know how they're like, oh, you have a good voice, you should take on a solo.
Mm.
And I was like,
I
don't think so. But then, you know, I think what I learned then is that a solo, and something that it's something that I'm still carrying today that I learned at that age, is that a solo is not you being in front of the stage so that you, like, put the spotlight on you.
Right.
When I started doing the solos, I realized you do a solo, what you do is, you don't lead when you do a solo. You lead by serving. Like, you may be in the front, but your solo is only as good as how you can be in sync with the rest of the choir, right?
Right.
So when I started, I was like, oh, a solo, then I'm going to be a star. I can't deal with this. But actually, I realized, when you do a solo, it's like you have people backing you up.
Mm.
And what you do is not like sit on what they give you to magnify yourself.
Right.
It's like hearing what they're saying and just, you know, lifting the collective voice. And that's something that, I mean, I didn't articulate
that's
that.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
I didn't have any of those words in my head, but I did feel every time I did a solo, I felt like I never felt like I was out of the group or in front of the group or at the head of the group. I felt like I was in the group playing a particular role. But, you know, I mean, I guess we would call it like leading from behind, I guess, which is not exactly the case because clearly you're in front. But what I mean is like, you know, it's not, leadership is not about you. Leadership is how much you are in the group. I think I learned that lesson from singing quite early.
Oh, that is so powerful. And that was going to lead right to my question of what do you think leadership is, or even if you think or see yourself as a leader? Because I know there are many women and professionals in general who have had amazing careers, have done amazing projects and championed different ideas and done all these different things, but don't see themselves as leaders. What's your thought on that specifically? And why do you think persons may not even see themselves as a leader?
It's so funny that you're saying this, because literally this morning I was having a chat with a friend because I'm redoing my CV. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know how you put a title in your CV, you put your name, you put a title. I was like, I'm not going to say, like, you know, gender experts.
Yeah.
And she was like, you need to put Pan-African feminist leader. I was like, girl, wait, you know, I just feel like, I think this is a bit too much.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, are you not a Pan-African? Yes. Are you feminist? Yes. Are you a leader? Yes.
I was yes.
like, am I? And there I think go. On this leader, I was like, oh, I think that the question I ask myself is like, if leader is something that you claim, do you claim it or somebody gives it to you? Like, and then as I'm saying this, I'm like, am I being modest because, you know, I'm a woman and women do this? Or am I really like, you know, so I think maybe part of the answer to your question is like why people don't claim it.
Yeah.
I think that part of it is like we are just like socialized to make ourselves small, to be honest. But also we feel like leadership is something, I certainly feel a bit uncomfortable about calling myself a leader. But if somebody will call me a leader because I've played a role in their movement or in their life of leadership, then I'll take it. So as long as I haven't received it, I'm not going to go and claim it. And
honestly,
I don't think it's right. Honestly,
yeah.
I don't know. Some part of it, I'm like, you know, maybe it's just me replicating the things that the patriarchy has put on us of being humble, and humble for what, you know?
Yeah.
But I just don't know. It doesn't feel natural. To be honest, it doesn't feel natural.
Honestly, when you said something there that really struck with me. You said, is leader something you even claim? And that kind of hit me hard in the sense that, you know, like I always hear this saying, you know, if you're rich, why do you need to say, or, you know, like, why is it necessary to actually say it out loud or put that as your title, so to speak? Or is it more something that persons assign to you based on what you've done for them or how you've served them? And to me, that's powerful. But I never really thought of it that way.
Well,
so no, it has me thinking.
Well, so for me, I just feel like, as I said earlier, I mean, leadership is not something you do for yourself. There's
right.
no leader without a community.
Yes.
Right? You're not, it's like people who call themselves influencers, like, who told you you influence them?
Yes.
You
know? That's it.
As long as you don't have a lot of people telling you you have influence, you are not an influencer.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's exactly the same for leadership, because leadership is about community. And you
right.
asked me about my understanding of leadership, my definition of leadership. For me, leadership is very much about serving, so service and community. It really, so for me, it's like identifying a community, which could be a community as a family, it could be a community of activists in my case. And I'm so, for me, I don't call myself a leader because I'm so focused on serving, you know, that I don't think about leadership the way it is typically, you know,
seen or yeah. But then even by your definition, it does mean you are a leader, but you don't necessarily have to say it in order to claim it, if that makes sense.
I don't know.
You see what I'm saying? Yes, I'm telling you, no, you're a leader. Okay.
I take it. If you give it to me, I'm not saying no. Thank you very much. So do I put it on my CV or what? Because this has
yes. to be yes. Yes, of course. Like, yeah. What do you mean? I'm so sorry. So this is such an interesting way or spin to look at it, and I appreciate your take on that, because honestly, I don't think anyone has said that in that way that I've spoken to recent so far. And then that then leads me to the next question of what pushes you to want to serve? Like, what is it you're holding to push you to serve others? Where did that even stem from or come from for you?
That's not an easy question. I think it's just who I am. I was trying to think as you were asking the question, where did it start? I don't know a moment when it started. Mm. I just feel like as a very young child, there's two things that happened. One was that I was a privileged kid, like a middle class Cameroonian child living in urban, you know, space with, like, you know, middle class parents, you know, going to a good school, all of these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think my mom did an exceptionally good job of telling me I didn't deserve any of it. But she was always pointing out the privilege without using that word, but she was like, you know how kids are like, this is my car. She's like, you don't have a car. I have a car. You are invited in my car. Be quiet and be clean. But she was like, you know, she was like, and she was also telling me, you know, as I would go to school, I specifically remember going to school and my mom would be, you know, your cousin, you know, who is in this house that you, you know, drive past as you go to school. She's not going to school. She's sweeping the front of the house. She's going to be doing, like, you know, like cleaning all day. And you are from the same family. You don't deserve
what
you have. And she doesn't deserve not to be in this situation.
Right.
So I had always this thing. And she would then also tell me, you know, this thing, it's, you know, life is not fair, but that's not right. So we have to do something about it.
Right.
My mother was not an activist. I wouldn't think of my mom as an activist, but she was, you know, like, doing things for the community. I've always seen her, you know, like, she would take me, she was volunteering in an orphanage, and as soon as I was, you know, old enough to help other kids to read, she'd be like, hey, come in, you know, let's go. So I kind of felt like service was, you know how people, I think there's this quote that says that service is what, it's like the rent I pay for, or, you know, being alive or something. For me, it was always like clear that, you know, I never asked my question, so how am I going to enjoy the things that I didn't deserve? It's like, how do I make sure that what I have by accident is not an accident, but it's a basic right for everybody? So I always thought like that. So I guess that's where it all came from. So very early on, people would ask me, so what do you want to do when you grow up? And I always knew I didn't want to go in the private sector. It was very clear to me, I think before I was even 10, I was like, maybe I want to advocate for truth, so be a journalist. And then my mom said, you know, journalists lie a lot, so I decided not to do that. You know, but things like that, I was like, I was really about exposing injustice or fighting. And then, so I guess I could credit it to my mom somehow.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, like, would you say, like, the first leader you ever was influenced by would be your mom?
Yeah, my mom certainly, because I saw her really up close. But also there've been many leaders that I've been able to observe in my immediate family. So my dad is actually a chief of village.
Right.
And it was so interesting, you know, like the notion of community, of family, you know, what it looked like. My dad, the moment he became chief, like basically the house was open from 5 a.m. People would be like, kong, 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 you know, I have this issue. I need to talk to the chief. And you're like, you know, people are sleeping. But, you know, like it's open house, you know, like having this sense of, you know, so I saw my dad, what leadership meant to him, and my grandfather. Right. was a pastor. And so he was like such a strong pillar in that community where I would go and spend my holiday with him. And but his wife, my grandmother, was also a leader, but so quiet. So like, you know, those quiet leaders, like, but she would draw people to her with kindness. While and kindness and like service and nurturing. While and she would hardly ever say a word. Like I don't remember so easily the sound of her voice.
Right.
But my grandfather was, he was really tall. Like he was like the, you know, the pastor, you know, in the village, you know, like his, yeah, his voice is what is his. I've observed
it, like project in a sense. Yeah.
So I've seen leadership. I've grown up, you know, surrounded by so many leaders, and yes, my mother was one of them, but not really somebody who would call herself a leader either. But yeah, I've certainly seen a lot of leadership very early on.
And I like the, because honestly, there's many leaders that you might see over time, or especially as a child, maybe not even recognizing that they are leaders, but definitely an authority figure in your life.
Right.
And at no point, if I truly think about it, at no point can I even say that I heard those leaders calling themselves leaders, you know, unless you were like in politics or something like that. Like you didn't necessarily see community leaders say they were leaders.
Right.
And, but you just knew. So like, even how you said, like your grandmother, she was the quiet leader, but she would still influence and do that with care and love, versus your grandfather who was more the pastor and would be vibrant and project. And it showed you different sides of how you can be as a leader, but I don't think any of them would ever call themselves that. So know that you say, I resonate with that, honestly, because in a way, you can't really be a leader if others aren't following or aren't influenced by you. So calling yourself that without a following doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. As you said this just now, it's really funny. I was thinking those leaders I just spoke about. When I take my grandfather and my father, the men, they would call themselves leaders, I think, if you ask them. My dad, currently, if you ask him if he's a leader, he'd be like, of course, you know. However, the women on that list probably wouldn't.
And so then,
so interesting, isn't it?
So there you go. So you, in a sense, see what you even might be mirroring. But then it brings about that question of, then why don't women step up? Why are women more likely to say, no, I don't think I'm a leader? Like why do you think that is? Is it cultural? Is it, you know, something you've just seen over time in history? Like why do you think we don't be more assertive about our stance on leadership?
I think in general, women are socialized to be quiet, to not take up space. You know what I mean? You know,
right.
I think the society is like that. We live in such a patriarchal society. I think it's one of these things where this, as I said, it's a system thing, you know, like we are made from day one to know our place. And a woman's place by the lens of the patriarchy is not in leadership.
Yeah.
And you know, and there's a lot of things that we say, you know, where I come from, be like, you know, women can be leaders in the home.
Yeah.
Or men can be leaders, but they are the leaders that are behind, you know. I think like this idea that women take up space, is something that has been just drilled out of our minds. It's just like not a possibility from day one.
Right.
Literally day one, you know. So the way we are raised, the way we are taught to have things at school, the options that are presented to us.
Plus, yeah.
You know, like modesty is one of those tools. Humility, like the pressure to be humble, the pressure to be small, you know, as some of those tools that patriarchy has just been using, and they have been passed on, you know, by in so many ways. So for us to say, I take up space, I am a leader, you know, you have to go against all the voices that you know will tell you, but who do you think you are? And it's not easy, I think there's a part of that.
I think we're making progress, but I don't think we are even anywhere close to where it could be.
Because look at the way men don't care.
Yeah.
So a man will be a tenth of a leader and be like banging all the pots in the house saying he's a leader. A woman will be, you know, 120% of the leader she needs to be for a particular position in community, at work, and she'll still be hiding. She's like, please don't call me a leader. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So
I wonder where that, you know, I know history plays a part, systems plays a part, but I'm wondering, like, you know, even when women are in the position, are in the role, so to speak, there's still not a belief. There's a lack of confidence there, etc. And I'm wondering if, because even down to, like, you know, there's so many women I've spoken to who would say, should I go forward for that promotion? Like, should I even ask for more money? Whereas a man, on the other hand, he's going to be first, but at the same time, the woman is already starting from behind because she's already not being paid what she should be anyway, you know, even though she might be doing the same role. So there's so many different ways that the shift has to occur, but I think one of the major ways is that women themselves have to believe, just believe, because I think women are one of the most influential parts of the human species, honestly.
Yeah, it's true. We do, I think you're right, we have to believe. I agree. We have to believe it, but we don't believe what we don't see.
Yeah.
Mm. We don't believe it if we don't have the role models.
Yeah.
We don't believe it if we don't have, like, people in our lives.
Yeah.
Who are telling us to not believe, to believe that and not to believe the things that we've heard all of our entire lives.
Yeah.
Right? So.
It's funny you say that, because I had an interview with another guest on the show, and they had this thing where they were saying, you know, your thoughts turn into feelings, and then your feelings turn into action. So obviously, if you don't think you are a leader, then you're not necessarily going to feel or believe that you are a leader. And as a result, you won't necessarily act. You know, you won't act as, and I don't even want to say as a leader, because leadership is not about acting, but more so portray it in your daily presence, I would say.
Absolutely.
This is awesome. So, Francois 2020, talk to us about where you're at now, what you have going on, and how are you leading today?
So today, I through Ayala, a lot of my leading is leading through listening. So I do a lot of listening, and it turns out I love it. I'm typically I'm a bit of a reserved person. I mean, if you kept me talking the way we are now, I'm not going to shut up. But in a room, I'm typically the last person to speak. You know, like so, as you know. So I love to listen, and I've been listening to women. I love doing the interviews that I do on ALA. And for me, listening is also my favorite way to learn. So I've been doing a lot of listening and also amplifying. I don't believe in this idea that there are voiceless people and that other people need to be the voice of the voiceless. Mm. I feel like everybody has a, I just don't even know where this phrase is coming from.
Yeah.
I think everybody has a voice. The question is, who do you listen to? And whose voice do you amplify? So I feel like my leadership, if I may call it this way, is a leadership that decides to amplify, to listen and to amplify.
Right.
And also, I also love leading by convening. So getting people in the room, like, and giving them, telling them it's okay to have the converse, that other type of conversation.
Wow.
Let's just go for it, you know? So I remember when the first time I did a sister circle was on the side of a big conference that we had all been there, jet lagged, running around in our power suits and our high heels. And, you know, in this room full of, you know, our bosses, our donors, you know, we're all there. And it was all on the last day or the day before. And I had created this space. I had a whole agenda. And then I was so tired. So just, I think maybe 2 hours before, I called the guy. And I was like, you know, just change the whole setting. Take out the tables. Just put a circle. And then we're going to have a circle. And I just told everybody, you know what? It's been a rough week. We've been performing. Right, it's just us. It was a room, like my favorite kind of room, a room full of African women.
Mm.
And just like, you know what? I took my shoes off. I'm like, ladies, we are tired. It's just us. Let's cut all the performance and just talk about what we are feeling, how we want to just show up the way you want to show up. By the, you know, within the 30 minutes, people had taken off their shoes.
Oh, no.
On the floor, eating chicken. You know, it was so beautiful. I just loved it. And I think I love those kind of spaces, because when you take off that pressure to perform, that's where you meet people for who they really are, and them showing you what they think you need
you to want see. To see. Yeah.
So the day I did that, it was really one of those days that my life changed. Like, I could feel my life shift, and thinking, you know, when you do something and you're like, I have had moments like this in my life where I'm like, something is happening. I see myself doing something, and I know that I had not planned this way, but I just did something that will change me forever.
Yeah.
And this was, I will never, never forget this day for that. Because I realized this is a space that women need. It's a space that I need. It's a space that I know how to get people into. So this is my contribution.
Mm. Yeah. And I love that it's not only about creating that space, but creating something that is authentically
absolutely
everybody, like, you know, everybody could just literally, I like how you said, you know, taking away the pressure and not feeling like you have to perform, you know, look a certain way and be a certain way and just be.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Because what you said earlier, well, I think it's very accurate when you said, I think you said something like, you know, women can't see themselves being leaders, because we see leadership as a performance.
Yeah.
You know, when they give you a textbook of what a leader is, you know, it's like how to be a leader. Like, those books are written by white men, for white men.
Yeah.
So you are here trying to find yourself, like, what kind of looks like you in those pages, but you don't belong in those pages. How many books about leadership have you seen written by Black women who are not American. Because me, I'm still looking.
Yeah, I was like, wait, hang on.
I'm still looking, you know.
I don't think I've ever found one.
Read the book by Oprah, you know. Yeah. Okay, great. But, yeah, you know, there's so many layers of it's just, I know, you know, the experience are universal, but not fully.
Yeah.
So I just feel like I just love feminist leaders being themselves. It's just like,
and also not feeling like you have to conform to the Western way of doing anything.
Absolutely.
I think we have a similarity in many ways, in terms of the perception that work must be done a certain way. Even you as a professional need to do things a certain way. How you work, how you interact, how you entertain yourself, what circles you surround yourself with. There's this perception that it must be done a certain way if you're going to fit in.
Right.
You know, or if you're going to create these opportunities for yourself, you have to do it in this way. And I don't think I agree with that, because I would say in all the opportunities I've ever had, honestly, none of them have come in the most traditional way as everyone expects them to. So for you, when it comes to things like success, when it comes to being a successful individual or professional or even successful woman, like, what does that mean for you? And have you reached it? Is it something you're still moving towards? Is it a constant thing that you're shifting?
It's so interesting because my definition of success has shifted drastically in the past few years. I grew up to be, it's so interesting. This year I'll be 35.
Right.
And I would say that for the first, maybe at least the first 25 to 28 years of my life, I was your box checker. I was like, you know, first of all, I always say this, I was not raised to be somebody's wife or somebody's mother. My parents raised me to be somebody's boss. You know, their parents were like, all I'm asking, get out of my kitchen, just go and do your homework. Some of my parents are like, oh, you can't cook, how come? I'm like, how come? You know, but really, they were like, go and do your reading, go and do your homework, all of those things, right? So I was, and then I grew, and then I went to France when I was a teenager. And, you know, like any typical immigrant kid, what you are told is you have to work 5 times more.
As hard,
Or 10 as hard to get half of what all the white kids are going to get just by virtue of being.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm a bit distracted because it smells of smoke in my
house. Sorry.
I don't know what's going on. Okay, I'm going to trust that my house is not on fire.
I'm sure, I hope not, firstly, but I'm sure not.
But because I'm not the only one, so somebody else has a nose, so I'm hoping this is going to be fine. I was going to say I was really groomed for success that was success in a very traditional, very Western, very capitalistic definition. And that's what I did for most of my life. And I remember, I've grown to be very obsessed with work and with excellence in particular. I was literally groomed for performance. And then something happened, a couple of things happened in the past 10 years, I would say. One of them was I found myself making decisions that were not fitting that model just because my heart was there. So, for example, I remember I was working It was my first paid job, but it was like a big job, you know. I was like living my best life. I was in London. I was working for the elders. I was helping the elders, people like, you know, Desmond Tutu or Graça Machel, or I was helping them, you know, doing campaigning on child
Wow.
marriage, for ending
nice.
Child marriage. I was like living the life, you know. And then I fell in love. And at some point I just felt like it's now my now husband. He was moving to Senegal. And I was like, so what am I going to do? It took me 9 months to realize that it's the stupidest things by my rules.
Mm.
But that is where my heart is, that I need to give this relationship a shot.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I quit my job. My dad, like literally, my dad almost disowned me. He was like, he couldn't even talk to me.
No.
He would call my mom. He's like, please, please come and talk to your daughter.
Talk to her.
I can't deal with this, you know?
Oh, no.
I'm not saying people should quit their jobs to follow a man. I'm not saying this at all. But I'm saying, the first time in my life, I made a decision that didn't make sense, but felt right.
Mm.
And it was one of the best decisions I've made.
Mm.
And I think it would have still been one of the best decisions I've made, even if this relationship had ended after 2 months.
Right.
Because I was like, this is what it feels like to do what is right by your heart and not by the book. And then other things happen is that, I came back and then I continued to like do what I was supposed to do and work. And a couple of years, maybe 5 years later, I burnt out severely.
Right.
I was exhausted trying to be the perfect manager, the, you know, one woman team,
you know,
do everything, go everywhere, speak everywhere, you know, like do all the work, you know. Micromanage people because you're so obsessed with success that you don't trust others. I did all of these things. And I had months and months when my body was telling me, girl, you need to sit down.
Yeah.
And I didn't listen. And I didn't listen because I grew up with a mother who would tell me, there's this phrase in French le travail, c'est la santé. It's like work is health. I don't know if it's a phrase as well. So my mom would say this phrase to me at least once a day. So when work made me sick, I didn't understand that's what was happening. I thought I was just tired, that my back was just hurting, I couldn't sleep, I just thought, you know, like, but before I understood I was really, really, really burning out, I was like almost completely burnt.
Wow.
And it took for me to have a massive, episode of memory loss.
Right.
That I was like, hey, this thing.
Yeah.
This thing is bad.
That must be scary though.
It was so scary because somebody asked me, how was your weekend? And I was like, I don't know.
What? Yeah.
And I remember asking somebody, do you remember what I asked my husband? Like, you know, do you remember what I told you I did this weekend? And it started like, of course. And I just crumbled. I started crying everything just got together in my head being like, you've been ignoring all the signals that your body has been telling you. Why? Because of what? Because you want to tick the box.
Yeah.
And that was also another, you know, really big change because I mean a few months after that I had quit that job, which was another fantastic job that I loved, and within a few months I had dropped it and I started working on Ayala instead and being a consultant so I can say no. And honestly it's still difficult, you know, because my natural instinct is to go to try and do everything, to be everything, you know.
Yeah.
Because that, you know. But I think what I'm learning from all of that is, so I'm trying to remember what the question is that you asked initially.
But you are answering it because even the last statement you said, when you said, you know, I quit that job and started Ayala so that I could say no.
Yeah.
And to me, that's, you know, if you're going to define different stages of your success, that in and of itself is a stage that you committed to yourself to knowing when to say no, but having an environment or a life where you can, if yeah. you need to.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think when it comes to success, that's what, because I had a point when I was saying all of this. I think the point I was trying to make is that the way I define success now is so completely different, because for me, success is being able to do, to say yes to you first.
Right. Yeah.
And so I've learned to say yes. So because Ayala was this idea that I had in the back of my head, but I never had time for it because I was busy, you know, like I was like doing the rat race, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I just felt like, you know, there's this thing I really want to do. I really want to do this. Let me say yes to what I want instead of saying yes to what I think I have to do, because that's what success looks like. And I felt, in a way, since then, it's been a very difficult journey because Ayala is a one-woman show. I do everything on my own. But I still, and I have a lot of moments where I feel I'm not doing enough, I'm punching below my weight, you know, but I still never feel not successful because I'm doing it for, I'm saying yes to me.
Yeah.
Right? I'm saying yes to me, and not in a way that is self-glorifying, but mm-hmm. in a way that I'm able to say yes to me and still serve the community.
The community.
The community of feminist activists that I'm dedicated to. Like, isn't that success? I don't go around every day calling myself successful. Tell me.
That's the thing. I don't think most successful people walk around just, you know, saying that. Yeah. But I think it is a form of success. And even if it isn't everything that you might be hoping for, it's everything that you need right now. And I think that's part of the success, you know. And so as we start to wrap up, I know there's, because I feel like we could talk for another hour, by the way, P.S. But as we start to wrap up, I know there are a lot of people out there who are thinking about what's their next move, you know, kind of curious about how their career is going to blossom and or might be just in a position that you are in where they feel like, you know, they might be in a career and not sure if it's serving them and not sure if it's really fulfilling their level of success. Mm-hmm. What's one piece of advice that you would give to them right now? Just something or some action that they can take right now that can help them to either shift in wherever they would like to go or adjust how they're seeing their next step.
I'm going to give the advice I wish I had received. maybe 10 years ago is to, you know, we have different voices in our heads, you know, like and I think I wish I had learned earlier to know who is speaking that I'm listening. When I'm saying, oh, I should do this, is it me saying this? Is it the voice of the people who have told me that work is health and that I should work myself to them? Is it the system who is telling me I should be humble and not go for this job because it's too big for me? Like, who are you listening to?
Right.
Know the in your head and just decide to identify the voice that is really yours and listen to that one first. You can never stop yourself from hearing the other ones, but the one you really want to listen to first is that one.
Yeah.
Intuition, people call it whatever, but I think that voice, that is you. The other voices are not you. Listen to that voice first. And then, of course, you need to have the bravery to follow what this voice
follow
is
through,
advising.
Yeah.
Because that voice is insanely bold sometimes. But that voice for me, like to be able to listen to that voice is done wonders for me, really. I've made the scariest decisions, but they turned out to be decisions I can live, even when it goes south, because it's my decision. Like I decided, I wasn't trying to impress. I was just trying to be me.
That's amazing. That advice is actually, I'm going to take that advice myself, by the way.
I need to take it, because I need to take it on a regular basis.
Yeah, so thanks for the reminder. Repeatedly. But that's amazing. Thank you so much, Francoise. This has actually, you've kind of taught me a different way of looking at different things, and it's helping me to reevaluate even how I see some things. So thank you for that. Thank you for jumping on to Leadership. Thank you for being a part of this family. Maybe we'll catch up sometime again, because I feel like we can add so much to what we've discussed already. So thank you so much. And until next time, guys, this has been Leadership, and we'll soon be hearing this episode soon.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me, Alien.
Of course.